You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey. Maybe you're thinking about an encore career that may involve helping others more than you're involved with today. Our guest today argues that that's not something to put off. It's not something to procrastinate about. And she knows from which she speaks. Barbara Greenspan Shaman is a noted educator, businesswoman, and social entrepreneur. She has used her skills and abilities to empower others to create social change. She founded Champions of Caring, a nonprofit organization that has empowered over 10,000 youth in Philadelphia and South Africa to become leaders in public service and active, engaged citizens. The overwhelming success of Champions of Caring has led her to create her newest venture, Embrace Your Legacy. She is the author of two books entitled Live Your Legacy Now, 10 Simple Steps to Find Your Passion and Change the World, and her newest book, Live Your Legacy Now, My Portfolio, to share her message and encourage adults of all ages and backgrounds to embrace and live their legacies. As the daughter of Holocaust survivors, Shaman knows the importance in the accompanying sense of responsibility that comes with legacy. From corporate team building and community outreach to organizational culture changing, public and private high school classrooms to university seminars, faith-based programs to community groups, Shaman has presented to audiences of all ages and backgrounds, nationally and internationally, changing the world one person at a time.
Barbara, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Joe. Thank you for inviting me.
So I'm curious, what inspired you to become a social activist?
Well, you know, as I thought about that question, I realized that it really goes back to my family of origin, and I need to start at the beginning. My parents, Henry and Carola Greenspan, were survivors of the Holocaust. My mother lost 65 people in her family and was in the Lodz ghetto, then incarcerated in three death camps, Auschwitz, Stutthof, and Theresienstadt. My father worked for Oskar Schindler, and because of that, he had safe haven for a while, but which meant he had food and he went to Schindler's factory every day and he wasn't in the grueling horror of the ghetto in Krakow. But unfortunately, he was not put on the list and was sent on the death march and wound up in Theresienstadt, where he actually met my mom. And my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, also survived. And I was born in Europe after the war and came to this country, moving to New York City to a neighborhood in Washington Heights, which had a lot of Holocaust survivors. So I actually naively thought as a child that everyone was the son or daughter of Holocaust survivors, because that was my community, that was the school that I went to. And so living in this world, I had so many aunts and uncles. None of them were my real aunts and uncles, but it was this wonderful community that embraced each other and became our surrogate family, if you will. So from my parents and from this community, I learned about the importance of speaking up and being a Mensch, as my mother would say, a good person. That's a German Yiddish word that says, when in doubt, my mother would say, always be a Mensch. And I was touched deeply by the stories of how my parents and grandmother were a Mensch during this horrific time. My grandmother would say, even in Auschwitz, there was time to be a good person. And in Auschwitz, my grandmother found berries growing on the ground. And when she crushed them, they made a rouge-like substance. So every morning, there was something called Appell, where the people incarcerated in Auschwitz or the other camps would have to get up, line up, and they were called by their numbers to see who survived and who had died overnight. My grandmother would get up early in the morning at 3 a.m. and start rouging with these berries the cheeks of the frail elderly women so that they could live yet another day. And I would say to her, Amma, Grandma, weren't you afraid? She said, yes, but you had to do something good. I said, how did you maintain that humanity? She said, you know, when they called me by my number, my resistance was, I would say in my head, I am not a number. I am a human being. I have dignity. My name is Golda. So that kind of story really sustained me. My mother was 15 years old when the war broke out, living in Lodz, Poland. And she was taken to the Lodz ghetto, which was an area that was carved out in Lodz, where the Jews and the undesirables, you know, the gays, the gypsies, people who were physically or psychologically impaired were sent there. And my mother said to me all of her life, you know, I was 15 years old, she would tell me. I already had lived a good life, but there were 2-year-olds and 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds roaming around aimlessly in this ghetto. So I took it upon myself and a few of my friends. Every morning we would get these young children together and tell them stories and sing songs and make up games because I wanted them to have a decent life, even here in the ghetto. And I just wanted to share how poignant this is. My mother died of dementia about 10 years ago. And one of the last things she said to me was, how can I die? Who will take care of those children? And I knew she was not talking about me or my brother or her grandchildren. She was talking about those young children in the Lodz ghetto. And I looked at her, I said, don't worry, Mom, I will. And she said, oh, thank God. So this idea of helping others resonated in her life till her dying days. So learning this need to show gratitude for what we have in life, to be resilient, to take care of others, to be a mensch, was really something that came from this horrific family history. But it was not the history. It's how my family responded to the situation at hand. Viktor Frankl said, and I just read this recently, you can't always change, or frequently you cannot at all change the circumstances around you, but you can change your attitude and how you feel about those. So in the midst of this horror, they rose to be decent, good, kind, caring human beings. And my mother always had the mensch test with me. I'd come home from school when I was 7, 8, 9. She'd say to me, so tell me, darling, how was school today? What did you learn? And now for the important question, were you a mensch today? And tell me how. So in the beginning, I thought I would have to be superwoman and like jump off of buildings and save people. And I'd come home with all these crazy stories. And my mother would say, honey, I can smell a lie. Just do 1 or 2 nice things every day. So then I learned, I'd come home and say, you know, nobody was sitting with Sarah at lunch, so I sat with her. And she'd go, great, honey, that's a mensch. You know, and nobody's inviting someone for a sleepover, so can I have her over? Great. And she would encourage me. And you know, you'll laugh, Joe, but to this day, I'm in my 70s, I still do the mensch test every night. Some people count sheep. I reflect upon, would my mother be proud of me today? Was I a mensch? What did I do? And what can I do better tomorrow?
What a great test. It's one we can all use and benefit from. So thanks for sharing that. So, Barbara, why did you create Champions of Caring? What events triggered you to create that not-for-profit?
Well, it's a very interesting story. I'm a baby boomer, and I have a degree from Hunter College in education. And I really assumed in the 60s and 70s that, you know, once you pick a career, that's the career you stay with. Today, millennials change careers, I think, every 7 years. But in those days, if you were a GE guy, you stayed there. If you were a lawyer or a doctor. So, you know, I was teaching. I was writing curriculum for Title I programs. And I was married to a GE executive. And we moved every 4 years. And every 4 years, I could not always get the same job. There wasn't always a need for teachers. So I've sold Häagen-Dazs ice cream. I mean, I could really regale you with all the different careers I've had over a lifetime. But when we moved to Philadelphia in the 80s, I was interviewed by an executive search firm to recruit senior level healthcare executives. And even though candidly, I knew nothing about it, I was a quick study. And I really loved my work. It was challenging. I was working with CEOs of hospitals, recruiting senior level staff. And I felt like I had hit my stride. And then one day in Philadelphia, there was an international gathering of Holocaust survivors. And at the end of the gathering, we marched down Broad Street. Thousands of people were at this event to the Liberty Bell. And my mother looked at me and my brother and my father. We were all linked hands in our arms and said, "You know what? I never thought I would say this, but I want to go back to Poland. I want to tell you the story of what happens when people lose their humanity and a world stands by silent and indifferent." And my mother had always said, "I will never step foot in this country again because it's drenched with the blood of my family." So it was interesting that this conference had her reflect on her decision. And my brother's a physician, and he said, "No, Mom, I think this is not good for you. It could be very traumatic." She says, "No, I want to do this." Well, if you had known my mother, she was a woman with vision and was on fire with an idea. And she got 100 Holocaust survivors and their children together, and we went to Poland. And I could share for hours what that trip did to change my life, but I just want to share the incident when we went through Auschwitz, because that was the catalyst for me to reimagine my life. My mother was a toothbrusher. My mother would brush her teeth compulsively day and night, and it would drive us crazy. And we were always late for things. Even with dementia, she would want to brush her teeth in the middle of the night, and the caretaker would have to take her to the bathroom to do that. We walk into Auschwitz. My mother turns to me and says, "I was 19 years old. I lost my family. I lost every vestige of my humanity, but I had a toothbrush that I had snuck into my dress. And I had it with me. And even though I had no water, no toothpaste, just feeling the bristles on my teeth made me feel human. They took that toothbrush away from me." She said that was the most devastating loss because I had already lost everything. And this was my only vestige of humanity. Well, when I heard this explanation, I had such a visceral reaction. I'd never heard this story before. I ran out of the museum. I said, "Mom, I have to go get some fresh air." And she was talking with other people and with the guide, so I left. And I was shaking terribly. And in the courtyard, there were a group of young 15, 16, and 17-year-old boys who were on a field trip. And they were laughing and clowning around. And I thought to myself, who can do that in a killing place like Auschwitz? This is not Disney World. You know, this is a very serious place where you should reflect on life and humanity. And they just kept laughing. And I went over there and I said to them in German, which is my first language because I was born in Germany, "Do you know where you are? Why are you behaving this way? This is terrible." And they started laughing even more. Joe, I had an epiphany. I can't keep recruiting doctors and healthcare executives for a living. I need to work with youth to teach them kindness, empathy, caring. I want to teach them to be a mensch, to become social activists, to address important issues in their lives and in the community and create positive social change. And this name, Champions of Caring, just came to me. Because I thought, why are we only acknowledging young people for academic skill sets, for athletic skill sets? What about the heart? Aren't we trying to create good people, compassionate, empathetic people? And I came back, and my very dearest friend who you knew, Suzanne Wright, her husband at the time was the CEO of NBC and Universal Studios. And we were very close family friends. They knew my family for a very long time. And they asked me how was the trip to Auschwitz. And I shared with her and Bob my experience in Auschwitz. And I said, I have an idea for this not-for-profit to create cultures of caring in schools, particularly inner city schools, but all schools in the Philadelphia region, and to teach young people to be change agents, social activists. And Bob, with such a gracious heart, said, I'm having a meeting with Steven Spielberg in a couple of weeks. Would you bullet this out briefly in a letter? And I will not just hand it to him, but I will read this to him and speak with him. And because of Bob and Suzanne's generous hearts, my seed money for Champions of Caring came from the Steven Spielberg's Righteous Persons Foundation. So there are no words of gratitude for my now deceased girlfriend, Suzanne, and her husband, Bob, for the kindness. And it taught me, don't be afraid to ask for help. Have a great idea and understand you can't do it by yourself. And go to the highest level that you know, because people in high positions can really move a project along quickly. I could have never gotten this endorsement or support, and I understand that. But what's the worst that can happen, Joe? They say no. So you try again. But because of their initiative to create momentum for my project, we've been around now for 25 years, touched 15,000 lives, and started a pilot in South Africa.
Wow, that's all of it's very impressive. And these days, like most times, but it's unique now, there's so many challenges around us collectively, and there's adversity that all of us face in our lives individually. Certainly, we're all dealing with the impact of COVID, civil rights unrest, et cetera. I'm curious, what drives you and what keeps you going?
You know, my mother used to say, the more you give, the more you get. And in difficult times, reach in and then reach out. So for me, it has always been enriching and empowering to make a difference, particularly in the darkest moments of my life. I have found getting through the deaths of loved ones in my own family that I would think about when my mother died, what would be something that would be a meaningful tribute to her? And again, it would be working with inner city youth. I knew that was so important to her. My son died a few years ago, and he was a journalist who wrote extensively about immigrants. And I created a project in his memory to assist DACA kids and immigrant kids at Kensington High School here in Philadelphia. So this is a way of my getting out of my grief, taking all of that energy and putting it into something that can help others, that I face this adversity with a degree of resiliency. And there's a joy in this creation that something positive is going on, and it pulls you out of the malaise of grief. So recently with the COVID situation, I was thinking about the healthcare workers who were on the line, doctors, nurses, aides, in ERs and ICUs and in respiratory therapy. And I felt this need to do something because I felt like everyone very helpless in this situation of COVID. And I started making some calls. My first call was with my daughter and my grandchildren. And because I like to pull in family and make it intergenerational. It enriches the process. And I would tell your listeners that if you can pull in your family and multiple generations, you're teaching them these values, but you're engaging them. And we talked about what can we do? And I came up with the idea of bringing meals into Lankenau Medical Center, which is a hospital that serves a very interesting geographic location in that it serves one side of Philadelphia, which is quite indigent, and another side of Philadelphia where people have more resources. And Montgomery County, where we lived at that time, and Philadelphia had the highest rate of COVID. So we partnered with California Pizza Kitchen and this hospital, and I'm proud to tell you that we have brought in 500 meals and 350 snack packs for the ICU, the ER, and respiratory therapy. And I love that my 19-year-old grandson was saying, you know, Bubby, Grandma, I think you should do a GoFundMe campaign. And I said, well, I have no idea how to do that. And that's the beauty of making projects intergenerational, because they know how to do this instantly. And for me, that seemed overwhelming. But just engaging them with the idea was so enriching, and seeing them come up with ideas and them wanting to know how's the project going. So that's one point. Now, with the horrific systemic racism that's going on in this community, I'm again being pulled to what can I do through the foundation? And I've had meetings with my consultants and staff members. And one of the things I'd like to focus on right now is getting the police and these inner city kids in dialogue in schools. I've done this before, but I think now is a time for bringing these different groups together. The kids are frightened to death of policemen, and policemen sometimes don't have a clue how to relate to these teens. So I'm working on trying to create a new phase of our Champions of Caring program to create harmony and dialogue, because only by speaking with each other and sharing our feelings, our emotions, and our thoughts can we really create change. So I say to people, look for something that you can do. You can't do it by yourself. That I know for sure. Involve your family, involve community, and come up with ideas that people can support you on. My greatest strength, Joe, is that I know my limitations, and I know when I need people to support and help me think things through. And every time I open up that circle to people I trust, the project is much better than I ever have envisioned.
I recently had the pleasure of reading your book, Live Your Legacy Now. Very impressed with it. And what does it mean to live one's legacy?
Well, to me, it's about what is your story? Can you create and write your own story of your life? You know, we're born tabula rasa with a blank slate. And of course, circumstances happen to us, a lot of positive and negative. But how we deal with that is really the core issue. And truthfully, I started this book as an ethical will for my children and grandchildren. I wanted to share my values with them, what was important to me in life. And I wanted my voice and my writing to be heard so that when I am gone, they can look at this and say, this is what she was really all about. And my husband was an estate planning lawyer. And he said to me, you know what? I think this is bigger than just the family. Take out the very personal things and leave that as a separate document. But write this book and have people really reflect on their lives and the vision they had for how they were living their lives. You can create it. You know, you can make your, and sometimes we're blocked without a doubt, but we also have the power to create things. What are your core values? Identify those values. What issues are important to you? And at different stages of life, there might be different issues. Like now in the era of COVID and race, horrible racism, my issues are changing as well because I want to help now. What can I do to further society's issues for good social change? What is the vision you have for a better world? What are the issues and problems that upset you and motivate you to change things? You know, David Brooks talks about two kinds of values, resume values and eulogy values. Resume values, as we all know, are, you know, I had this job from this time to this time. This is what I accomplished. These are my skill sets. But let's look at those eulogy values. What are the things that you did to live through your soul, to make social change, to live your values, to share those values with others? So I think legacy living is something we do all the time. And it doesn't have to be huge. It's, did I show up as a mensch today? Was I kind? Was I caring? Did I make a difference in someone's life? So legacy is what you live and how you live your life with your values in the forefront of your thought process. Was I a mensch today?
That really gets to it. It's not what we say, it's what we do.
Right.
So you point out in your book that people can do this at any age or stage of life. Focus of my work is on retirement and early retirement. What do you see inspires people to get involved during retirement?
Well, for me, retirement is a time of reflection and assessment. Who am I now? What do I care about? What are things or skills that I have in my toolkit that I enjoy using? Meaning, let's say I was an accountant, hypothetically, but I don't want to do numbers anymore. I've always had a passion for public speaking. Maybe this is a time I can learn that skill and utilize that skill. What is important? What do you love to do? I was teaching a course and a man raised his hand and said, you know, when I think about what these questions you're asking me, I love playing golf, he said to me. Can I take that love of golf and do something to create social change? And the group brainstormed and they said, inner city kids never have an opportunity to play golf. Why don't you see if you can approach a school and put together a little proposal and just say you would like to do that? And this man lit up. He said, really? He never thought that he could do that. A friend of mine knits, loves to knit, knits all the time. And she and I sat down one day and she said, what do you think I can do with my knitting? I said, well, is there a group of people that you really care about? And she said, you know, I've been reading about women in halfway houses, that once they're in prison, then they go to these halfway homes, and then they're let back into society. And many have nothing. What if I knitted Afghans for them? So that would be the first thing they could take to their new home. And she called the project Care Squares. And she got a group of friends together and they would knit and talk, but they were making these magnificent Afghans. And in with each Afghan, there was a note welcoming them into the re-entry into society. And they hoped that this Afghan, which was made with love, fills their soul. So I love stories like this because it really opens up possibilities to take what you enjoy doing. It could be gardening, it could be cooking, and sharing that skill or doing something with that skill to help others in times of need. The secret for me is don't do something you don't enjoy. You know, sometimes people say, well, we need someone to do X. And if you find that very aversive, it's not a good introduction. But if you can take what you love and look at a need in society and couple the two together, I think that could be very inspirational and useful for folks in retirement. I know that's what keeps me going.
It's really powerful if you can connect those dots.
Yes.
Find that connection.
And it, you know what? I wanted to add to that. Do it intergenerationally. It's so rich when you do it with other generations and with friends. I had a group of friends that used to go to lunch just to talk. And they said to me one day, you know what? Instead of going to lunch just to talk, because we're retired now, we're going to talk about doing projects together. And this group of 10 women came up with different project ideas and it enriched the friendship. They learned new skill sets and they were giving back.
Something we all can do. So why do you see people put off living their legacy? What gets in the way?
You know what gets in the way, Joe? Life. Raising children, having jobs, careers, moving, all the challenges of life. But you see, for me, legacy living is how you present in the world every day. My legacy is, was I kind today? Was I caring? Did I help someone out? Was I a listening ear? And as you progress with responsibilities in life, you can take on more challenges. Don't bite off more than you can chew. That's a very big mistake that people make. They have grandiose ideas or they feel, oh, I must make this a 501c3 not-for-profit. No, start small. Take an idea and maybe involve your children or your friends or colleagues at work or people in your faith-based community. And then see, can you do this well given the time constraints that you have? So you have to be very realistic about, I can give an hour a week or 2 hours a month, whatever that is. It's always better to have something with limitations that you can succeed at than to create something huge and you find that you're always overwhelmed.
I'm sure with many listeners, the wheels are starting to turn and they're thinking of ideas that they could apply. What advice would you offer someone who wants to live their legacy now?
Well, start small. Small steps that give you satisfaction are very important. You don't, as I just said, you don't want to be overwhelmed and say, I just can't do this, and you throw out the baby with the bathwater. Start with your family. Do it at a Thanksgiving dinner. Talk to them about, you know, we're so grateful for so many things. This is a great time for us to give back. What are some ideas? Listen to every idea at the table. Because, Joe, I can tell you that sometimes my best ideas have come from 8-year-old grandchildren. because they have these wonderful visions of the world. Sometimes, like my granddaughter once said, let's end hunger in the world. I said, how about in one little community in Philadelphia? They have these huge visions. But so start a dialogue at a family holiday. Meet with friends. Talk to colleagues at work. Reflect on what issues are important to me right now. What do I really care about? And what skills do I enjoy using? We have lots of skills in our repertoire. Some of them are difficult and we don't like them, but we needed to learn them to succeed. But there's some, like writing or art or music, that we really love. Can we take, I think the secret is, can we take what we love to do and use that? And then work with other people who have other skills, like the people who've been working, as I said, with numbers all of their lives, and suddenly they want to be involved in public speaking or presentations or putting together PowerPoints. It's a great way to learn new skills.
So in the coming months, I'm going to be looking forward to driving south on Route 95 again toward Philadelphia. I live an hour north of Philly. And there's a lot of billboards I see along my way. If you had one message to share up on one of those billboards, what would it be and why?
So about 10 years ago, I was walking on the beach in Atlantic City, and a woman was wearing a t-shirt that said, "Flaunt your humanity." And I just did a double take, because the word flaunt is a word I don't care for. It sounds like someone showing off their material wealth. But when I saw the word humanity coupled with it, I thought, wow, how wonderful if we could live in a world where everyone lived from the heart. Everyone showed these virtues of kindness, empathy, and caring. I would love to be part of that world. And people felt good about themselves. Wow, I flaunted my humanity today. So I think that would be a really interesting kind of message on a billboard.
That's terrific. I'll keep an eye out for it.
Okay, let's get it done.
So thinking about retirees and what might be on their mind, do you have any other thoughts that you'd share for them to contemplate?
Enjoy it. When you get involved with something, enjoy it. Don't put yourself into a situation that's onerous or unpleasant. I know I've had experiences over the years where I might have served on several boards, and I realized that I was not really contributing enough or growing enough from the experience, and it took lots of time from my day to be involved, and I felt maybe someone else was better suited to sit on that board. So you have to know when to fold them and say, I need to move on. Really reflect on, what do I care about now? What issues are important to me? And how can I share these with people I love and care about and enjoy? I go back to family, to friends, to colleagues, to community. And for me, it's intergenerational. I love learning from young people. My book is used in some of the social entrepreneurship classes at Drexel, and I come in as a guest lecturer. And the joy that I get from these 20-year-olds asking me questions like you are today, but sharing with me what their passion is, what their vision is. And I'm amazed at how they're about to undertake a project in ways that I've never thought of. It's so refreshing. And then I might share an idea. And this kind of collaboration is so rich. And I'm really moved that right now, during these protests that we're seeing about George Floyd's horrific death, that young people are taking the charge. And it's very gratifying to see this young generation take on their responsibility and help create a better world. So if we can share ideas and come together, I think it will enrich all of us.
And picking up on those themes of intergenerational collaboration and lifelong learning, could you share with us the project that you're involved in with Temple University?
Yes. So, Joe, you and I are part of an organization called the Life Planning Network here, and we're trying to create a paradigm shift on how aging is viewed in society. And many of us teach that are in this group. Teach from our life's work. They're experts on resiliency. They're experts on gerontology, on death and loss. My area is legacy. And we've been teaching at Osher Lifelong Learning for quite a few years. There are about 10 of us, and we present to this a population which is 55 and over. And a few years ago, I approached Adam Bruner, who's the director of OLLI, and I said to him, wouldn't it be great if we could create an intergenerational course where we would have Temple undergraduate students, OLLI students who are over 55, and our life planning network group come in and work with a professor to teach a syllabus around aging and ageism and the things we all need to know about having a better life as we age. And they found a wonderful professor, Dr. Tanya Giovanetti from the psych department. And we're in the process with a committee from the LPN, Life Planning Network Group, of putting together this curriculum to bring these two populations together to share ideas and outlooks on life. And I'm very excited about this venture because I think together we can really create something wonderful.
It's a great list of courses, great syllabus as expected, and very interesting approach to the collaboration generationally. Should be great. We've covered a lot of ground, which I greatly appreciate taking the time to do. Is there any last subject that you want to touch on or summarize for our listeners?
Remember, living a legacy is writing your life story. Write it creatively. Think big. If you make a mistake, what have you lost? I've learned more from the mistakes that I've made in my life than from the positive accomplishments. But we have this one glorious life to live. How can we live it? To fill our hearts with joy, to reach out to others, to create social change. And when you're sitting with a grandchild and they say, well, what are you all about, grandma or grandpa? There's the joy of passing on those values and then watching them. My grandchildren are 17 and 19, and they're in positions now to really create social change. And it just touches me deeply when I see these values transmitted from one generation to the next. So dream big, start small, but make something special happen in your own life and in the lives of others.
Well said. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing your insights and values with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.